Dear devotees, the last few days I've been explaining to you the characteristics of true bhakti as related to us by our scriptures and great saints. So we learned that according to Rup Goswami, anyabhilashita shunyam, and according to the Bhagavatam, lakshanam bhakti yogasya nirgunasya hyudahritam ahaituki, and according to Naradji, kamana rahitam, and even according to our Vedas, upasate purusham ye hyakamah, bhakti should be done without any kind of worldly desire in the mind. We should not ask God for worldly things. So I spent a couple of days explaining this point to you, that we should not ask God for bhukti, which means worldly enjoyments from this world, all the way up to Brahma's abode, the topmost abode in Swarg. In addition to that, we learned that we should not ask for mukti, because mukti, or the state of liberation, is a divine state, but it's a divine state of no experience, and if one enters into that state, they will forever remain bereft of the ultimate experience, which is the experience of Premanand, the actual bliss of the personal form of God, which can be experienced if one sets that as their goal. But if one asks for mukti, then that's all they get. We also learned jnana karmadya navritam, according to Rup Goswami, and according to the Bhagavatam, avyavahit, that bhakti should be without any kind of covering of other practices. Karma, jnana, yoga, tapasya, whatever they may be, all the other rules and regulations and spiritual practices which are recommended in our scriptures are bypassed when someone adopts this pure path of bhakti, desireless bhakti, with only the goal of God realization. Then they bypass all of these other spiritual practices, and there's no need for them to try to supplement bhakti with any of these. Although these are all sattvic practices that are recommended in our Vedas to elevate our consciousness, but they are no longer necessary for the one following the path of bhakti, just like the one who has graduated and gone to university no longer has to visit his high school. The third characteristic of true bhakti is that we should not try to love God, but we have to take the godliness out of God in order to love Him. Bhagwan se bhagwatta nikalna hai, tabhi hum pyar kar sakte hain. In order to do this, I explained that there are five ways. They're called Shant Bhav, Dasya Bhav, Sakhya Bhav, Vatsalya Bhav, and Madhurya Bhav. We have to establish a relationship with God in our mind, in our heart, so that we truly feel related to Him. Then we will love Him. So these five relationships, in order of increasing closeness, are feeling yourself to be the subject and God is the king, feeling yourself to be the servant and God is your benevolent and loving master, feeling yourself to be the friend and God is your friend, feeling yourself to be the parent, the mother or father, and God is your child, and feeling yourself to be the beloved and Shri Krishna is your soul beloved. This is Madhurya Bhav, the final and topmost one. Whichever one you adopt, it increasingly establishes a relationship between you and God. And each of those relationships brings you progressively closer. So you should adopt one of those relationships in your heart. And when you do devotion to God, you should think of God in this way, so that He's not just God who's very distant from you, but your master, or your friend, or your child, or your beloved. See how much closer that is? You're my friend. That's different than your God. He's God also, that's fine, but he's not only God to you. He's also your friend. And as long as you are thinking of him as your friend, then you won't be focusing on the fact that he's supreme almighty God, which creates a feeling of formality and distance with you and restricts the loving feelings of intimacy that you could develop in your heart, which is the true goal of doing devotion. We call that bhav bhakti. Trying to attach your mind to God is called sadhana bhakti, and when the mind becomes more attached and you develop feelings of love for God, this is the beginning of bhav bhakti. This process goes on purifying the mind up until the culmination of bhav bhakti, when you receive God's divine grace and you become God realized, and you can receive his prema bhakti, which is a divine power, God's innermost divine power, which he grants to us upon the completion of our devotion, when our heart is 100% purified. And yesterday I explained to you the fourth characteristic of true bhakti, which is that it must be ananya. Our devotion to God should be exclusive, which means that our mind should be attached only in God. We should not attach our mind to any devi, devta, meaning the celestial gods and goddesses who themselves are under Maya. Just like we bypass other rules and regulations and spiritual practices once we've adopted this pure path of selfless bhakti, in the same way we bypass the need for worship to any of the devi, devatas, which people normally do for family prosperity with a desire in their mind to gain more wealth, more health, more friends, something like that. So we bypass all of this. If we're worshiping Supreme God, there's no need to fulfill any kind of worshiping formalities or religious formalities related to the devtas. They themselves are under God, so if you're worshiping God, you've already satisfied all of them. Just like you water the root of a tree and the whole entire tree right out to its leaf tips receives what it needs straight from the roots. So you worship Supreme God. There's no need to adopt any other kind of worship. And even within the divine field, eventually a person does have to decide, which form of divine God am I going to worship? Because although they're all divine, they're all one, and you can attach your mind anywhere in the divine field and it will purify your mind, but to progress more quickly, we need to choose one form of God to love and direct all of our feelings towards that one form. In that way, our feelings will develop much more quickly. And we also keep in mind that the different forms of God give a different type of bliss and a different type of divine realization to their devotees, which means that it's not all the same. There is a difference in the experience depending what form of God you worship. I explained it with this analogy, that if your mother is a Supreme Court judge, you can't just burst into the courtroom and demand to sit on her lap when she's in the middle of court. When she comes home, you can be all full of mud from playing outside and you can jump on her and she'll be happy to see you, but you have to treat her with great formality in that work environment. Similarly, when Shri Krishna is in his almighty form in Vaikunth abode as Vishnu or Shiva or Durga or any of the almighty forms, he behaves very seriously, and you must as well. That is not to say that you wouldn't experience unlimited divine bliss in Vaikunth abode, but the experience would be different. There is a different experience if you attain Shri Krishna or Radha Krishna, where he's at his most informal and his most playful. That's like when your mother comes home from work and you can play with her, you can sit on her lap, you can love her any way you want, you can show your affection, and there's no fear of that formality. It's the same way with the different forms of God who allow us a different type of relationship depending upon what they're revealing in their personality. So we do have to choose a form, because you can only attain one form of God, not multiple forms of God. So choose which form you want to attain and worship that form while still respecting all other forms. This is ananyata. Now we come to the fifth characteristic of true bhakti. In the Gita, Sri Krishna tells Arjun, Asmat sarveshu kaleshu mamanusmarayudhyacha. Arjun, while fighting the war, you must remember me all the time, every second. Evam satata yuktanam bhaktastvam paryupasate. Satatam means continuously, all the time. This idea comes again and again and again in the Gita. Ananyash chintayanto mam ye jana paryupasate. Tesham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham. Nitya abhiyukt. Abhiyukt, the mind should be in God. Nitya, all the time. And in this very same shloka, Shri Krishna also used the word ananya. We must be ananya. He says, Nitya yuktasya yogina. Tasyaham sulabha partha nitya yuktasya yogina. Arjun, the one whose mind is continuously joined with me, I am easily attainable by that devotee. In the Bhagavatam, when Sutji is describing the supreme dharma, he says, Savai punsam paro dharmo yato bhakti radhokchaje ahaituk pratihata yayatma samprasidati. The supreme dharma of a person, the paradharma, is whatever develops bhakti in your heart for God. That is the supreme dharma. And what is that bhakti supposed to be like? Ahaituki, without any kind of demand or desire from God, just loving God and submitting yourself to God, leaving the rest up to him, and apratihata, unbroken, continuous devotion. So unbroken devotion, continuous devotion, that means 24 hours a day, every second. Na chalati bhagavat padarvinda lavanimi shardhamapiya savaishnavagriya. Bhagavat. One's mind should never deviate from the lotus feet of the Lord for even a fraction of a second. This is true bhakti. This seems like a very difficult condition to fulfill. But like all the previous conditions you heard about, we have to understand it carefully and then try to implement it, or else bhakti will not give us the results that we're hoping for. So, what does this mean to keep our mind in God all the time? This is also called Karma Yoga Sadhana. Sadhana means the path, what you're practically doing in order to follow the path to God and get closer to Him. Karma Yoga Sadhana means the part of your practical devotion that you practice throughout the day when you're not sitting like you are now. Right now you are not doing karma yoga. You are all doing karma sannyas ki sadhana right now. Karma sannyas means leaving everything. You have all left everything, albeit temporarily, for 1.5 hours. You've come to sit here and do kirtan and listen to this pravachan. But you've all taken sannyas for this time. You've ceased all worldly activity. Your mind is withdrawn from the world. And you're only doing bhagwad sambandhi kaam. You're just thinking about God, nothing else. This is karma sannyas. So for this 1 hour or 1.5 hours, your mind is in God. What about the rest of the time? Bhakti is not just supposed to be something you practice once or twice a day and then forget about God the rest of the time. Like, let's say someone is training their body. They want to get strong. So they do a workout for 1 hour every day. They lift some weights. They go jogging. But during the rest of the day, they forget about it, right? They're not dreaming about lifting weights. They're not dreaming about going jogging the rest of the day. They do it for that hour and they forget about it. Then the next day again, they do it. Devotion is not like this. That, okay, I sat for 15 minutes and I remembered God, and now let me go about my business the rest of the day. Bhagwan, I'll see you 24 hours from now. Bhakti is not like this. Bhakti is supposed to be throughout the day, 24 hours a day. So you can say our intensive training time, like someone who's jogging or lifting weights, is that karma sannyas time like you have right now. This is when you get the chance to intensely attach your mind to God, think of Him and nothing but. But the rest of the day, we have to implement a different technique in order to keep our mind in God. So this is called karma yoga ki sadhana. How is it possible to keep your mind in God the rest of the day? It seems very difficult because your mind is going to be involved in other actions. Whatever you're doing, most of that work requires the involvement of your mind. If you're driving, that's why they tell you don't talk on the phone when you're driving, because you're supposed to be concentrating on what you're doing. The involvement of your mind should not be distracted by talking to someone. You should be watching the road. If you're doing some computer programming, you can only think of that, nothing else. If you're a teacher, you're in the school, you're teaching the kids, your mind is completely absorbed with that task. Then how will you remember God at that time? You can't just keep taking your mind away from that work, because your work may get spoiled. Arjun certainly had to be careful during the war, didn't he? Krishna told him, fight the war, but remember me every second. So how is that even possible? Arjun has people firing arrows at him. He's looking, who should I fire my arrows at? He's worried he may die. All of this is going on and he's still supposed to remember Krishna? Obviously his work, the work at hand of fighting that war, it was taking all of his concentration. Shri Krishna knew that, yet he said, no, but you still have to remember me at that time. How is that even possible? We can understand it like this. That the involvement of the mind and the attachment of the mind are two different things. They don't necessarily both have to be in the same place. The involvement of your mind means your mind is thinking about accomplishing a certain task. The attachment of your mind means either that you love that thing that you're doing, or you have this hope of getting happiness from that thing. That's attachment. You have some emotional dependency. Something is attached. You're depending on the outcome of this to make you happy. That means you're attached to it. You can be involved but not attached. For example, let's say in your house you have someone who cooks. You have enough money that you can afford to have someone come in the kitchen and cook for you and your family. So let's again suppose that your spouse has been away for many months. They had to go on a business trip. Maybe they had to go back to India. And they were there for 5 or 6 months. Maybe the husband had to go overseas and the wife stayed here in America. So after 5 or 6 months, the husband is coming back and the wife is thinking, oh, I'm going to make him his favorite lunch when he comes. I'm going to make him fresh gulab jamun. I'm going to make him matar paneer, paratha. This is his favorite food, so I'm going to make all of that for him. So she prepares the lunch herself with her own hands. And as she's preparing it, she's obviously, not only is her mind involved in the task, but she's very attached to the whole idea of this project of cooking lunch for her husband. So her husband gets back and she serves him the lunch and asks, of course, that how is it? How is everything tasting? And he says, oh, it's great. Very good. Very tasty. But when she thinks about dinner, she says, now I want to spend some time with my husband, so let me order this cook to prepare the dinner. The cook was just thinking, oh, I'm going to head out early today, and I'll go spend some time with my family. And just as he was getting ready to head out, the wife says to him, I want you to make this, 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 this for dinner. So he's stuck. He has to stay and cook the dinner. Now, when he's cooking this dinner, his mind is also involved. It's equally involved as the wife's mind was involved, because he has to do it properly. If he doesn't cook a tasty meal, he could get fired. He'll lose his job. So his mind is involved. He's doing it properly, but his attachment is not there. His attachment is in his family at home. It's in his wife, his kids. Now he prepares the meal, serves it to the husband and the wife, and asks them both, how is it? How does it taste? They say, oh, it's excellent, just how I wanted it, thank you. So the work being done was the same. The involvement of the mind was the same. But in the wife's case, there was also attachment. And in the case of the cook's mind was attached elsewhere. This is the key to karma yoga. Is that our mind should be attached in God even when we're involved in the world. How is this possible? It has to do with both knowledge and experience, and the two are related. What knowledge? The most basic knowledge. Who am I? Main kaun hoon? The answer, of course, is I am a soul, a divine soul. Main atma hoon. And who is the atma related to? Paramatma. The one who resides within us and gives life to our soul. The one who has been that close to us. It's called sadeshya sambandh. Like two roommates living in the same room. Like in a college dorm. You go and you have your bed, and you also have a roommate who has their bed in the same room. We have a divine space here called Dharakash inside in the center of our chest. And there we reside, meaning Atma, and Paramatma is also there with us. Sadeshya Sambandh. We have such a close relationship with him that we actually are living in the same room right in here. But even more than that, we have a sayujya sambandh, which means we're not just living in the same room. He is living inside of our soul. Just like our soul is in here, God is inside of our soul. So he is the soul of our soul. That's called sayujya sambandh. And that's an eternal relationship. So this is knowledge. I am the soul. I have this eternal relationship with God. If you forget this knowledge and you think of yourself as the body, then what is the body related to? The body is made of Maya. and the world is made of maya. So the body is related to the world, and the body needs things from the world: food, water, shelter, medicine. So this world can give our body what it needs, and God can give our soul what it needs. But we shouldn't get the two crossed up. Meaning, we shouldn't think that the world can give our soul what it needs. And then instead of, you see, that's what we do, right? We say, God, give me the world. Please give me money. Give me a friend. Give me a promotion. We're asking God for the world, and we're asking the world for God. What is the definition of God? Anand. Anando brahmeti vyajanat. Taittiriya Upanishad says, God is happiness. So we are looking for happiness from the world, and we're looking for the world from God. Totally backwards. We forget who we are, and that's when we make mistakes like that. So if we remember, I am the soul, I'm a divine soul who is eternally related to God, and this body is related to this world, and it has needs that can be met from the world. But my divine need for happiness can only be fulfilled by God. Then we get this deeper sense of what our identity is, that we're actually divine beings. This is the beginning of Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga cannot be practiced until this knowledge enters the mind. Or you can say, to the extent this knowledge enters the mind, we can practice Karma Yoga. So, you see, right now we have a sense of identity, your sense of self, and it's mostly centered around the body. I don't mean what you intellectually know. If someone quizzed you, who are you, you'd say, main atma hu. You'd pass the test, right? I'm a divine soul. But where, in our consciousness, what do we actually feel throughout most of the day? We're identifying with our body. You feel, I am a man, or I am a woman. I am a human being. I am a doctor. I am a cook. I am a teacher. This is all our identity, right? I'm a mother. I'm a father. All of these things that I mentioned, they're related to our physical body. When you wake up first thing in the morning, what do you think? You don't even think it. You just know it. You realize it and you feel it. You think, I'm a human being, I'm a man, I'm a mother, I'm a father. All of these things are immediately in your consciousness. In other words, that's your identity. That's what you identify with. Do you automatically think, I am a soul and I'm eternally related to God? Nope. That's there somewhere in the intellect, but it hasn't gone deep into the heart. Deep into our heart is our attachment to our physical body and all the things connected with that. That's why our identity is more centered on the physical, which is incorrect. This body is not us at all, any more than these clothes are us. Would you say, if someone asked you who you are, would you say, I am wearing a yellow shawl? That would be ridiculous, wouldn't it? So then why do we think I am a human being? That's just the covering of our soul. It's a temporary covering, yet we identify with it so deeply. We identify with it so deeply that no matter what work we're engaged in, no matter how involved our mind is with that work, we never forget for a second, am I a man or am I a woman? Am I a mother? Am I a father? Am I somebody's daughter, somebody's son? That stays in our mind because we're so attached to that physical identity and the relationships that go along with it. So you see, if you're somebody's mother, you never forget that. It doesn't matter what you're doing. How involved in some task you are, you will never forget that you are a mother, or that you're a father, or that you're a man, or you're a woman. So why is this? Because that sense of identity is very deep in our heart, and our attachment to those who are related to us is also very deep in our heart. So this is how we maintain a constant remembrance of who we are and who we're related to, no matter what kind of work we're involved in. If we could somehow work this so that that kind of deep remembrance of God could stay in the background while our mind is involved in our work, then we could become karma yogis. The way to get to that state of being able to do that is that first of all, we have to do manan of this fact. I am a divine soul and I am related to Sri Krishna. I am, in fact, only related to him because just like my body keeps changing, my worldly relationships keep changing in every life. So they are not sat. They are only temporary. My relationship with Sri Krishna is nitya. It is eternal. So it is sat. It is an eternal fact. Avritti rasakrit dupadeshat. Brahma Sutra says, listen to this basic philosophy over and over again and review it in your mind over and over and over again. Otherwise, tattva vismaranad bhekivat. You'll forget it and your life will pass you by and you won't have gotten that much closer to your divine goal. Thus, siddhanta balya chitte na kar alas. Chaitanya Mahaprabhuji says, do not be lax, do not be casual or lackadaisical in gaining this basic tattva gyan. This fundamental knowledge has to be gained and constantly reviewed in the mind. Only then our sense of identity will come around to what is the actual fact that I am a divine soul who is related to God. So this knowledge and getting this knowledge to go deep into our mind is the first thing we have to do in order to become, to gain the ability to do karma yoga. And how to do that? We have to do our own manan. Think about it again and again and again, as many times a day as you can. We don't even think about it one time a day, that I am a soul and I belong to Krishna. Imagine if we made the effort to think of it deeply 10 times in one day. That would make a big difference. It's such a basic fact and we never think about it. That's why it's never gone that deep in our mind. So we have to make the effort to do manan. Then we also have to think about our relationship with Sri Krishna, just like we meditate on our relationships in this world. This person is mine. I love this person. They are this to me. They are that to me. It makes me happy when this person is with me. This is how we develop our feelings of love and attachment to different people in the world. So we have to use this same method to develop more attachment in Sri Krishna. Think about our relationship with him. Think about that bhav, one of those five bhav that you adopt in your mind. Think about that repeatedly throughout the day. He is my beloved. He is my own son. Whatever relationship you adopt in your mind, repeatedly think about that throughout the day, and you will gradually start developing more and more attachment to him. So when this attachment goes deep in the mind, then the remembrance becomes much more natural. Right now, it's not that natural. Our remembrance of me being the body and me being related to all the worldly people, that comes naturally to us because we're deeply attached to all of that. And we have to make effort to think of Krishna. And as soon as we stop making the effort, our mind goes straight back to the world. So it's very difficult for us to do any work and still keep our mind in Krishna, because when we're not forcibly directing the mind in that way, it's just going to come back to the world. So it takes some time to get to a state of feeling natural about it, that your mind just naturally remembers Sri Krishna no matter what work you're doing. So don't be disheartened if initially you think, oh, so I'm supposed to remember God all the time. And today in my 8 hours of work, I thought of him once during my lunch break. The other 4 hours before and 4 hours after, zero. That's normal, completely normal. That's because we're not at that state of naturality yet. We have to work to get there. You can get there. You get to the point where that feeling remains in your heart all day long. But to get there, you have to develop the attachment to him. Let's say your child has gone away to college. And we're here in New York, and maybe they went to college out in California. And they didn't come back for 8 months. They stayed out there. So your dear son or dear daughter has been away for 8 months. They're flying into JFK tonight. You're going to go and pick them up. You're going to get to see them at 7 p.m. tonight. But you had to work today. You spent the whole day working, doing all the things you normally do. But I bet you, not for 1 second that whole day, did you forget the fact that you were going to get to meet with your child tonight. Your mind was involved in all the tasks. Yet somehow deep in your heart, that excitement was there that, oh, I'm going to get to meet them tonight after so long. That's because you're that deeply attached to them. That attachment you developed over many years of thinking about this person as mine. And, oh, I love this person, and this person gives me so much happiness. You thought like that so many times, and you got attached to them. So that's why you can naturally remember them. Now we have to work to develop a similar attachment in Sri Krishna. Then we'll be able to naturally remember him. Just like that. You'll be doing your work and tears will come because of a feeling of love in your heart for Sri Krishna. You weren't thinking about him consciously, but there's a deep feeling of attachment to him in your heart. Where did that come from? You worked to get it. But we have to do that sadhana to get there. Someone may also wonder, if I start getting more attached to God, won't that create a disturbance in my worldly duties and responsibilities? Will I still be able to work in the world? This is a fear that many people have. Really what it is, it's just our mind trying to find a reason for us to be more worldly and less devotional. Because just like I explained, you can do all your work the whole day and you're still excited to meet your child who's coming after 8 months. You're thinking somehow you're excited in your heart about it the whole day, but you still did all of your work. You weren't careless at work that day. So why could you not have that same loving attachment and excitement in your heart for God and still take care of all of your work? Obviously you can. Okay, what about this point, that the attachment of our mind, as it becomes more transferred to God, it's transferring away from our worldly attachments. So if we're 90% attached in the world and 10% attached to God, and we're doing more sadhana to develop our attachment to God, and we reach 30% attachment in God, we now only have 70% attachment remaining in the world. When you get to 50% attachment in God, you only have 50% remaining in the world. 70% in God, only 30% remaining in the world. So here, again, the mind throws up a question. Will I stop loving my family? How will I be able to take care of my kids, my spouse, my parents? How will I do all of that if I'm not attached to them? This is also just the mind letting its fears be known. There's nothing to worry about. Because the best duty is performed without attachment. Let's say you're a parent. What is your duty? Your duty is to raise your children the best way possible. Guide them, make sure they get an education, try to help them develop good qualities in their mind, help them learn good behavior, give them support, make them feel appreciated, give them affection. These are all the things we need to do for children. Is it possible to do that without attachment? Just take the example of a teacher. A teacher at school cares for the kids, shows respect to the children, shows affection for the children, does everything in a very professional way to try to develop all the good qualities of those children. The same way a parent would, except for one difference. The teacher is not attached to the kids. That's the only difference. And, you know, I visit many families around the country, and I've seen many examples of this, where the parents themselves have told me. Their young child, maybe 5 or 6 years old, will be, you know, disobeying, doing something they're not supposed to do. The parent tells them, and they still keep doing whatever they want. And the mother or father says to me, you know, when this one goes to school, she sits properly in front of the teacher, behaves very properly, listens to everything the teacher says, and then comes home and behaves like this. So why is that? Because there's an attachment there. The thing between the parent and child that isn't between the teacher and the child that allows that to happen is the attachment. The attachment clouds the reasoning of whoever has that attachment in their mind, and it just becomes difficult to know what's the right thing to do, what's the right way to instill discipline in the child, because the attachment just confuses our own feelings. The teacher does the right thing in the right way at the right time, and the child responds accordingly. And then in the home environment, we manipulate each other. The child manipulates the parents. The parents manipulate each other and the children. And all of this is not a condemnation of family life. I'm just saying, look honestly at your own self and see where there's attachment. There's often a pushing and a pulling. And it's not just, okay, let's see what's the best thing to do in this situation. What's the best thing for the family? What's the best thing? Where there's attachment, there's emotions involved. So it's, you know, more sometimes can be a case of, I just want to prove myself here and you have to do what I say is right. Or something like that. Amongst each other, we get this emotional pulling and pushing that makes it more difficult to live harmoniously and makes it more difficult to do the things that need to be done in a family. As worldly attachment reduces, these things actually become easier. Take the example of a doctor. Most doctors would not operate on their own child. Why not? You're the best doctor in this field. You're the best surgeon in this field. Why won't you operate? Your child needs this operation. Don't you want the best for them? Yes, but my emotions may get in the way and prevent me from doing my job properly. So that doctor will have a trusted colleague perform the operation. A judge will not try to rule in a case where one of their relatives is involved. Because no matter how much the judge may try to be unbiased, the emotions may get involved. So we see that in the world, duty is best performed, whether it's by a teacher, a doctor, a judge, without attachment. The more attachment there is, the more chance for a disturbance and a mistake to happen. And the less attachment there is, the better we can do our job. So, you see, attachment is normally a selfish thing. Jehi te kachhu nij swarath hoi, ta par mamta karai sab koi. Wherever we believe that our self-interest is going to be fulfilled, that is where we get attached, and then we have an expectation from that person that you are going to keep fulfilling my self-interest. And this leads to feelings of love. But the love had an adhar, or a basis of a selfish demand. So losing this attachment is not going to affect us negatively in terms of our ability to take care of or behave in a nice way with those people. That attachment was initially a selfish thing. So we remove the selfish part. You're still a caring, good, respectful person, so why can't you get along properly in the family? You should be able to. You just made it easier to get along now, because you removed the selfish attachment. But this doesn't happen through force. You can't decide, I'm going to reduce my worldly attachments. No, just do sadhana. Increase your attachment to God and watch the worldly attachments gradually reduce without having to do anything. So what I'm saying is, you don't have to focus on your worldly attachments. Focus on your attachment to Sri Krishna. The only reason I just explained all of this to you about the worldly attachments is so that your mind doesn't start making excuses. That, oh, but if I don't have attachment to my family, how will I take care of them? No, you will. It will be easier for you to take care of them. So don't worry about your worldly attachments. Try to increase your attachment to Bhagwan. In this way, the more attached we become to him, the more we will be able to perform karma sannyas, which means that our mind will be in him all day long. Then our mind will purify much more quickly, because whatever time our mind is in God, the mind gets purified. In order to help us along in this process, Jagadguru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj always recommended that one should, every hour on the hour, no matter what you are doing, stop your activity for a matter of a few seconds and remember that Sri Krishna is with you. You don't have to make it a meditation or anything. You just stop what you're doing and remind yourself, He is with me. So, for instance, if you work in an office or you work at your home, wherever you are when you're working, you should have a place where you say, okay, this is where Sri Krishna is. You're sitting at your desk, maybe he's sitting on your desk or standing next to it, or he's in the air somewhere. That's his place. So you go about your work. After an hour, you take a few second break, you just look to that place and remember, yes, He's with me. This gets you in the habit of remembering Him more throughout the day. When you get used to every hour on the hour, make it every half hour. Then after that, every 15 minutes. Keep reducing it until it becomes a habit and you get more accustomed to thinking of Him throughout the day. So this is karma yoga ki sadhana, which means our effort to remember God all the time. In order to increase our remembrance of God, in order to develop our attachment to God more quickly, we also have to know how to do karma sannyas ki sadhana, which means meditating on God. It means when you stop all other worldly activity and you just meditate on God, what we call rup dhyan. This is a very important practice which has to be done every day, for some time every day. This is the next shart. This is the sixth condition on the path of bhakti, that we must do meditation every day for some time. So what is the style of that meditation that we should adopt on the path of bhakti? I will explain to you tomorrow. बोलिए वृंदावन बिहारी लाल की जय